This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
With Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, it's Ready Set Bet here on a Sunday. Matt Brown, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. 16 games down. Let the overreactions begin. The team that you thought was terrible looked terrible, and that definitely validates your preseason thoughts. The team that you thought was going to run away with it obviously is. Now, probably time for us to pump the brakes here as we have just gotten through week number one of the preseason. Some teams played starters, some teams did not. Some teams were trying out new things, some teams were very vanilla. There's a lot that goes into the equation here in preseason week number one. We're looking for position battles. We're looking for maybe some shifts in playing time. And obviously, if you're talking about Cleveland, which we will here just in a second, who might actually end up being the starting quarterback? That is something that really will come through the course of the next 3 weeks. But when it all comes down to it, a lot of these teams aren't really taking preseason for more than just getting guys out there into active reps and trying to kind of get through this without any sort of serious injuries. Unfortunately, it looks like we did have at least one of those here in the preseason as well. Get through all of the games we saw yesterday. But first, we will have Grant Paulson on the show. He's going to talk some Major League Baseball. We will also talk to him, if we have enough time here, about what's going on with the Commanders and what he thinks. And, of course, the number gate going on there with Jaden Daniels and how big a distraction that may or may not be there in D.C. Greg Peterson, our very own Greg Peterson, going to join us. And I'll try to find something to fight with him about when it comes to Major League Baseball today. But all of his picks and more, life, dating, running, Texas Roadhouse, all of that coming to you. Sean Green from the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, he is going to join us and get all of his thoughts on the NFL as they've been kind of going through and breaking down all the different teams and all the different bets and some season-long props and things like that. We'll try to get his favorites, some of the one he actually hates that some of his colleagues perhaps are on as well. And then Jake Crane, so nice we had to do it twice. He's going to come back and give us some more thoughts here on college football. Great guest yesterday, so we had a lot more to get to. We didn't have time to get to it, so we will, in fact, get to it today. So stick around. It's going to be a fun 3 hours here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Let's kick things off here with the Bears and the Browns. It was 34-10 in favor of the Bears over the Browns. The Bears win outright as 2.5-point dogs in this one, over 39.5. Does get home as we get to 44 points there in that one. Now, two different strategies here in this one, but the outcome obviously shifted in the team that didn't play the starters. So the Bears, 34 points put up against this Browns team. The Browns did start Deshaun Watson in this one. Over on the other side, Ben Johnson said, you know what, I've seen enough of Caleb Williams. I don't really have to worry about what he's going to do out there on the field. We already know Luther Burden is dealing with an injury. He's going to be in bubble wrap until the season starts as it is. So two different ways about going about everything here in this one. Deshaun Watson did go 11 of 15 for 126 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. It was no passes of air yards longer than 10 yards either. So you can kind of read into this as maybe it's positive. I mean, he didn't go out there and look absolutely horrible. He also didn't really take any chances. This also was against the Bears backups in all of this. We actually do have his coach, Todd Monken, talking about his performance.
I mean, it was so cool to watch him play. I mean, I get all of the frustration by fans himself, but for him to come back and work like he did is an unbelievable credit to him. And then to go out there, he was having fun today. And that is so cool. And I thought he really functioned at a high level. Certainly, we don't want to be taking timeouts. We sure as heck can't take delay games, okay? But it was fun watching him play.
If that doesn't tell you that he's going to be your starter to start the season, I don't know what will. Like we said yesterday, this has to be Deshaun Watson and then Shedeur Sanders. You can't go Shedeur Sanders, Deshaun Watson, then back to Shedeur Sanders. So writing's on the wall to me, at least anyway. Deshaun Watson's going to get at least some sort of run here as the starter for this Brown squad. Shedeur came in 6 of 11, 79 yards and a pick for him. Dylan Gabriel came in 5 of 8, 23 yards and a pick for him as well. You did see KC Concepcion have a nice little outing here for this team. Jet sweep, touchdown for them in that one. Quinshon Judkins just 9 yards on 4 carries for this Browns team. Now, on the flip side here, the Bears played all backups. I guess the real story here in this one was they handed the play sheet over to Antoine Randle-El and let him just go in and and call the second half. They score 24 points and win this one 34-10 in this one. Now, listen, Todd Monken is going to say what he's going to say at the podium next week. Shedeur Sanders is going to start for them. He's already announced that Shedeur Sanders is going to start. He's probably going to say the same thing again about Shedeur Sanders. Look great, yada, yada, yada. You know, this is great. We're glad to have two quarterbacks going at it, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be Deshaun Watson when it's all said and done. So if I'm handicapping this Browns team, I think it's going to be with Deshaun Watson under center, at least for the first three or four games of the season. Vikings 13-10 over the Giants. The Vikings covered the point and a half that was available out there before this thing kicked. Under 41.5 was the prevailing total that was going on out there as well. So under on that one. Harbaugh didn't let us know who was going to play. We found out as we were on air yesterday, he was going to go with Jackson Dart in this one. So Dart played, didn't play a ton, but did get out there and go 3 of 4, 26 yards, a nice touchdown pass where he kind of was rolling against his body. He did turn his shoulder, squared his hips, hit a guy in a tight window in the end zone. Jameis Winston came in 8 of 9, 89 yards. Odell Beckham back in the fold, gets his first catch back in MetLife there for them. Isaiah Likely, if you forgot, is on this team now as well. Cam Scadaboo made his return. So we did see some Giant starters out there playing. We also look and see that we get the Kyler Murray experience for the first time as a Viking. Now, he didn't play very much before they switched to J.J. McCarthy and then eventually to Carson Wentz, but we do have Kevin O'Connell on the little time that we saw Kyler Murray.
Kyler's done a great job from an above the neck standpoint, being able to handle it. That was really our first time off the play clock, you know, working like the sideline to quarterback communication, his command of the huddle. There was a lot of really positive things that we saw out of that first group, and it, you know, 8 plays, it took everything in me not to, you know, keep him out there. But we kind of got a lot of the things we wanted to see out of that group, you know, done. And obviously a big week with the joint practices. Those guys will get a ton of work between Wednesday and Thursday.
Bills and the Panthers, 29-14. Bills covered the 2.5 there in that one, over 38.5. First game there in Highmark. So you did get the starters out there for the Bills to give the people what they paid for. And you get to see Josh Allen go 6 of 8 for 111 and a touchdown, playing with his new toy out there in DJ Moore, 3 for 61 for him. Now, that said, just something to keep an eye on. Doesn't seem to be a big deal, but he was seen after they pulled him out of the game, dealing with some trainers out there on the sideline, kind of went down tough after his third catch, but again, they didn't say anything of this, but something for us to keep an eye on here as we just continue to handicap all of these. We did see a tiny bit of Bryce Young, 3 of 5. Then we saw Kenny Pickett and then Kyle Trask in there for this one. Not a ton to pull from this game because you see you would expect this game was a regular season game. The Bills would have been heavily favored as it was anyway. The starters went down, scored with ease against this Panthers team, and then they got pulled. So that being said, you did like what you saw out of Josh Allen, and certainly that he was having that connection with DJ Moore was there at least early on there for this team. The Rams 20, Chiefs 12. Rams win outright as 2-point dogs, under 36.5 with this one. Obviously, no starting quarterbacks here for the Rams or the Chiefs in this one. We did see, though, I didn't like the pick. You know, Ty Simpson going in the first round, I did not love the pick. I thought it seemed like the Rams were ready to win today. That was certainly not a win today play and a pick, and they are typically the win today team, right? Go out, make these crazy trades. Understand that it might hurt you a little bit down the line, but you got to play within your window. That was not the Ty Simpson pick at all. That being said, does go out and played pretty well for them. Sean McVay had something to say about that.
He took what the defense gave him. You know, I thought he read the plays out, read with his feet. You know, I thought he did a really good job overall. And I thought even on some of the keepers where maybe the primary isn't there, he attacks with the ball up. You know, even on the first one that he had where he ends up finding Max Clair on kind of the late down flat, but hit a couple low crossing routes. You know, and I thought he kept the ball in play. You know, that's the biggest thing is keeping the ball in play. There was one situation that we'll have a great learning op on a third down where, you know, they kind of played a man coverage. We ended up throwing it to the flat to Max Clair. I got to see. I think the pocket might have allowed him to be able to progress. But otherwise, it was a really good day for him. He just felt like he was in good command, and it was cool to see a good smile on his face.
21-25 for 190 yards and 2 touchdowns there for Ty Simpson in this one as the Rams get it done, 20-12. Over the Chiefs, if you look over on the Chiefs side, not really much to take from this one. We'll see what they end up doing the rest of the preseason. More Rams news in this as that press conference continued. Of course, Sean McVay is going to get asked about Aaron Donald. I don't know if this is going to change your handicap on this team or not. It's certainly not going to change the odds because the odds are so incredibly low as it is anyway. Maybe a couple of pennies here and there just because people will pour in even more money on this should Aaron Donald officially come back. But basically he had to say he's put himself in a position to be able to say yes or no. I think he's earned that right to have the clarity on that. We're not at that point quite yet talking about a timeline. He said, I'm not going to put some sort of invisible deadline or something that doesn't exist in my mind. I feel great about our football team as it currently stands, and I know he'll add value if he decides to come. Now, there is kind of a deadline. Obviously, you have to have your team down to 53 players by August the 30th, but they're not going to rush Aaron Donald into something. I don't know, man. If you see the video and you see the stuff out there, sure doesn't look like a guy who's deciding whether he's going to come back or not. Sure looks like a guy who already knows he's going to come back. And even if that's in some sort of part-time role where he's going to just play, you know, 60% of the snaps, something like that, still a massive addition to the team that is already your Super Bowl favorite in the Los Angeles Rams. We saw the Jags and the Saints, 24-10 Jags over the Saints there in that one. Didn't see a bunch of starters over on the Jags side. Didn't see a bunch of starters over on the Saints side either. That one just is kind of a take it for what it's worth type of game right there. And that one, another couple games that we'll get to here. And there was, I think, something to pull from the Ravens and the Eagles and a little bit there, even from the Cowboys and the Seahawks. So we'll talk about that. And of course, a massive debut over in Major League Baseball as well. Major League Baseball's number 59 overall prospect gets called up, and he gets called up and makes his name right in the top of the headlines over at ESPN, CBS, and of course here at VSiN, setting history over in Major League Baseball. We are just getting started. Still got to talk some golf as well as Scottie Scheffler looks to win for just the second time on tour this season.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Appreciate you guys being with us. Sirius Channel 158, YouTube TV. Make that quad box the sound on us. Go ahead and do that. Of course, you can do your custom quad box now, so want to make sure that you're taking advantage of all of that. With today's sports action, you can listen to us throughout the course of the day. We're going to also be on that VSiN Watch app and, of course, terrestrial stations across this great country of ours. We're about to get a first pitch here in Orioles and Rays. I do like the Orioles over a run and a half in the first five. That's going to cost you about 115, 120, something like that. Freddy Peralta has not been good, and that's just a blanket statement across the entire season, and not been good over the last five starts, not been good over the last three starts. And if you look at this Orioles offense, shockingly enough, I know this seems very weird, and we'll actually get to the wild card race a little bit later in the show. Over the last 3 weeks, this is a top five offense in all of Major League Baseball. If you shrink it down to the last 2 weeks, it's a top three offense in all of Major League Baseball, kind of under the radar for this Orioles team. And so I think they can get to Freddy Peralta here in the first couple of innings and get us two runs across. So that's how we're going to play that one as we see Jackson Holliday. You know, the lineups can be sometimes a little crazy here, especially these early games on a Sunday, but it is a straight-up lineup here for the Orioles. So feel pretty good about that one in the account. Take advantage of Freddy Peralta's struggles in this hot hitting Orioles lineup, which I don't think we've been able to say all season long for them for sure. Getting back to the couple of games that I want to wrap up here from preseason, the Ravens and the Eagles, 24-7 Ravens over the Eagles. Ravens won outright as 3.5 point dogs there in that one, under the 37.5. No Lamar Jackson. We knew that was going to be the case heading into this one, but basically what you see here is, man, this was an absolute gem of a game on the defensive side called here by Jesse Minter. You started to wonder, okay, you know, head coach, come in, defensive-minded guy and all of that, really looked good against this Eagles team. You look on the offensive side, and I understand Lamar wasn't under center, but you certainly had to like the production that you saw. Now, it's probably going to be different play calls here and there, but you'd like to think that they ran an offense that was somewhat similar to what they're going to be running throughout the course of the season. And you know, Tyler Huntley was 6-7. Joe Fagnano was 22 of 28 in this one. You saw Jacoby Lane kind of show out here for this team. So got to like what you saw out of the Ravens if you are a Ravens fan, for sure. On the Eagles side of things, it was just super bland, super nothing, just an absolute nothing burger there. I mean, get Andy Dalton playing the game, Tanner McKee, whatever, all of that. So I'm not taking anything really from this one from an Eagles perspective, but I think from a Ravens perspective, you had to like what you see. And then Cowboys, 17-7 over the Seahawks. Cowboys won outright as a 1.5 dog in this one, under 38. You know, you didn't see any starters for either one of these teams, really. So not a ton to take from this one. You at least got to see the backup situation, though, as these are probably two of the better backup quarterback situations in the NFL, between Joe Milton and Sam Howell on the Cowboys side, and then Drew Lock and Jalen Milroe over on the Seahawks side. So you do at least get to see that and see the depth. If there were to be any sort of injuries to the starters, you could at least feel somewhat comfortable that you would have a fill-in that could get you through a three-game stretch or something like that if you were to lose Darnold or if you were to lose Dak or something like that. So that's really the only thing to take out of this one. Out of the seven games that we saw yesterday, the winning teams outscored the losing teams 106-20 in the second half for whatever reason. So again, it was like these basically the games, the first halves almost meant nothing, right? It was just basically what happened in the second halves in these games. You go and you see four of the seven winners were either tied or losing at halftime in this. And so it was just a tale of the second half. And it's basically like whose depth, how much longer did you play your second stringers than they went to their third stringers or their undrafted guys and all of that. And so just a fun fact more than maybe some sort of takeaway here, because obviously these team strategies are going to change over the course of preseason week two, preseason week three as well with all of that. So something to just keep in mind whenever you're watching here. Maybe you'll get some sort of glimpse here. Oh, we're going to play, you know, player X into the second quarter. We're going to play this unit into whatever quarter or something. And even into the second half, perhaps maybe you start to see even second stringers obviously are better than the dudes that are not going to be on the team whenever they get cut downs with all of that. So saw a massive, massive debut yesterday in Major League Baseball. And if you follow follow the minor leagues, and if you listen to the prospect news and things like that, you'd heard the name Joshua Baez. He'd hit 30 homers down in the minors. So, I mean, like you had heard the name for sure. You knew he was eventually going to get called up at some point. Comes in, first at-bat, home run. Second at-bat, home run. Third at-bat, home run. He had three at-bats in Major League Baseball, and all three times he left the yard. It was obviously a Major League record for someone to come up and do that. And with that, they get the win over the Cubs, 8-4. Baez comes in, looks at this. First pitch he sees, 400-plus-foot shot with all of this. And you're just kind of like, no way you can do it. It does it again. And then by the third time, you're like, there's just no way. Some better, because, you know, you always have these dudes that throw these crazy bets. Some better actually bet him after the first home run to hit three home runs in the game at some sort of crazy number. And obviously it hit, and the guy wins, you know, the donkey money there on that one. That was probably making, if you do the gambling Twitter, that was following, that was making the rounds around yesterday. Something else with all that. But the performance, absolutely crazy. And then the Cardinals are still in the mix with this. And if this guy can come in and help them hit, because that has been the big problem here. We've had a massive slowdown from Jordan Walker. Now, he's still getting on base. He walks a decent amount. Still, you know, get singles and stuff and a double here and there, but the power absolutely gone. I think he's got one home run since the All-Star break. Maybe it's the home run derby curse there for Walker, but all in all, very good sign here for this Cardinals team, who is making a push for the playoffs. We get the White Sox 4-3 over the Tigers, much to our chagrin, as we had the Tigers there in that one, though lucky for that to even be that close, as Troy Melton just got pummeled all over the place. When he finally gets pulled at 4 1/3, he had given up 9 hits there in that game. So White Sox get it done. One more win. We cash the over. We cash the over on the White Sox for the season win total. Yes, this early. We could get this done today on August the 16th. We could cash an over already. So let's go White Sox. Let's see if we can get that done here today. Blue Jays 4-1 over the Yankees. Yes, Cam Schlittler 5 1/3, 7 strikeouts, but 3 walks in this one as well. It was a no decision for him. Ended up giving it up late, but did not get the win on a Schlittler start for the Yankees. A little bit of an update here for the Yankees. You do get Aaron Judge playing catch. Now, we're not getting much more than that, but you do get Aaron Judge playing catch. If you're thinking about what could this team look like a month from now, Aaron Boone said just part of the ramp up to baseball activity. Hopefully he continues to progress throughout the course of the week. And so we do at least have activity now for Aaron Judge, as we know that he was dealing with all kinds of stuff there in that one. If we're looking at some of these other games for teams that mattered yesterday, what's going on with the Guardians, who are still trying to stay relevant here? The Padres were on a nice little heater. The Guardians get it done 6-1 over the Padres. Joey Cantillo might just actually be a good pitcher. He might just be good. Six innings, one hit, three walks, seven Ks, only one earned. And I mean, I'm telling you, this maybe he's just good. I mean, maybe he is just good and a guy that we need to pay attention to moving forward here. The Mariners beat the Astros. This is more about that division than anything else. The Mariners likely out of it, but the Astros are leading currently, but they lose 10-5 to this Mariners squad. Phillies 9-1 over the Twins. This one was never even close. Red Sox off the mini schneid, you know, off the mini schneid there, 4-0 over the Pirates. Some more Pirates news here coming out. Paul Skeens was supposed to start today for this Pirates team. They have pushed his start back 3 days to get him extra rest. He says he's fine with it, but the drop in velocity is just something you don't see very often and without there being some sort of injury attached. They're saying no injury, but this is a guy who averaged over 98 miles an hour on his fastball last year. Then we were getting to a point where he was barely hitting 98 throughout the course of an entire start, and then he was averaging 95 and change in his last start. So we're talking like nearly 2.5-3 mile an hour difference here from a velocity standpoint for Skeens. Says no injury, but something we're going to have to keep an eye on for sure, because this is not normal. Diamondbacks 10-3 over the Braves. They're going to go for the series sweep today on the road. I like the Diamondbacks to score in that one. That's a bet that I have in the account. Brewers 4-1 over the Dodgers. The Miz takes care of this Dodgers team. And I don't know what else to really say anymore about this guy. Six innings, six Ks, one earned, only five hits given up. His ERA is 1.75 on the season. It's backed up by everything that you see out on the field. Guys, just absolutely amazing. This why this Brewers team is a real threat, I do believe, once we get to the playoffs against the Dodgers. If you get this every single time the Miz steps on the hill, and then you get Logan Henderson, who has been very, very, very good for them. If you can find a reliable number three. Now, Kyle Harrison got lit up on his last start, but he has been a pretty serviceable, pretty dependable guy there as your number three. You might could actually clip them in a series. I think that is at least within the range and realm of possibility here. When we come back, Grant Paulson is going to join us. You should catch him every day on MLB Radio. We'll get his thoughts on what he thinks maybe a series could look like with all of that. Is there any other prospects that could get called up and change what these teams look like and change what these offenses look like when we come back here on the other side?
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Chris Abed here on VSiN. Guys, football season almost here. Here's how the sharp plays sees it first. Exclusive data feeds from the four major sports books out there. Every play is logged. Every result is public, dating back to 2011. No steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycled plays. Follow the sharp plays at sharpplays.com. Let's go ahead and head straight out to the guest line here. Bring in Grant Paulson. You can catch him weekdays there. Grant and Danny Show, 106.7 The Fan in D.C. Also, weekends over on Major League Baseball Radio at Grant Paulson over on the Twitter machine. Grant, appreciate the time, man.
You got it, Matt. How are you?
Doing great. And as a guy that follows the minors myself, and I know that you do as well, you see a debut like yesterday. And I mean, listen, guy had 30 bombs in the minors, so you expected the guy to come up and have some power. But 3-for-3 in the first three at-bats, that was just something else.
Unprecedented. I mean, literally never seen before. It's never happened before. Anytime you get something done for the first time in the history of Major League Baseball in 2026, it's a remember where you were kind of moment. And that was the case for Cardinals fans, for Cubs fans, certainly at Wrigley Field yesterday. But Josh Baez, the prospect we're talking about, is number three prospect in the Cardinals system. I've been surprised they haven't called him up sooner just because of the power he would have provided, some of the slug and extra base hit ability that would have been a shot in the arm for that lineup that's been treading water trying to stay in the hunt in the NL wildcard picture. But, yeah, 34 home runs at AAA. The big difference for him here over the last two seasons is his swing decisions have gotten better. Mm-hmm. For a long time, it was power, but we weren't really sure, was he going to make contact? Was there too much swing and miss? And if you notice, his strikeout rate went from up over 40% prior to 2024 to, you know, down around the low 30s, like 32% over the last year and a half now. So I think it's a really encouraging sign that he's making better swing decisions. He's putting the ball in play more. He's hitting for some average, 287 last year, hitting for a respectable average this year. But nowadays, you can kind of count on him to have good at-bats, to not swing and miss a ton. The power is massive. And last year, he was one of two players in the minors with 20 homers and 50 steals. The other was Connor Griffin, who came into the year the top prospect in baseball. So this is a real-deal player who's going to be good for some time in St. Louis.
Grant, are there any other guys that could get called up here over the last 40-ish or so games that could make a real impact? I know everybody was kind of just assuming Cade Anderson was going to get called up because the Mariners were finally going to ship some pitchers out of town and make room for him. They only ship one out of town. He hasn't been called up yet. As outside of him, are there any other bats that you're kind of keeping an eye on here that can maybe shape some of these teams as they chase down a playoff spot?
Yeah, a couple of things. One, I would say we're still going to see Cade Anderson inevitably, and we should. There's another pitcher in his system and on his team who was also at the Futures game, Ryan Sloan, who just punched out 9 5⅓ yesterday in his most recent start, and he's punched out 181 innings. He's arguably the best pitching prospect in all of baseball. I think he's big league ready. Now, whether that's in the rotation where they're loaded and don't really have a spot, or pitching out of the pen for a Seattle team trying to make a wild card, that would make a lot of sense for me. As far as bats go, I'd love to see Franklin Arias get a shot. He's only 20 years old. He's in AAA with Boston right now, but he is a legitimate impact player. 17 games at AAA, hitting 300 with a 900 OPS. He was hitting 320 with a 990 OPS in 75 games at AA. He's already homered four times in his first 65 at-bats at the AAA level. I think he's the best hitting prospect right now in terms of power that's kind of big league ready in the entire sport. Think about like Jesus Mate from the Brewers or Leo DeVries from the Athletics, who came over from the Padres in the Mason Miller deal. Those guys are 19-year-old teenagers who are, you know, newish at AA this year, whereas Arias is a little further along, and I think he could actually help with not only his power, which is above average, but his hit tool at the major league level. So that would be a name I'd throw at you. And then one other guy, the issue for him is that there's not really a spot, but Josue DePaula, who I just saw at the Futures game this summer, 21-year-old lefty bat from the Dodgers, I think is absolutely ready to help at the major league level, hitting 315 with a 960 OPS at AA. He's got 21 homers and 85 driven in and on the season, and believe it or not, as a massive guy with tree trunk legs, 6'3 and 200 pounds. He's already stolen 29 bags this year as well. So the question is, when and how do you get him to the majors in that Dodgers lineup? But I think if he got a shot, he could absolutely help them, the rich getting richer there in Los Angeles as well.
Talking to Grant Paulson again, Grant and Danny over there during the week on the weekends on Major League Baseball Radio. We've just got a ridiculous American League right now. I mean, you look here at the guys that could actually make it into the playoffs, and the list almost seems endless here. We see the team that I've just talked about all year long as being the most underperforming in the Orioles, and you look and they're a half game out of the last, you know, of the last wild card spot with all of this. As you kind of see the dust settling here, I assume you're confident in the Yankees holding down one of these spots, but what do we look at from the AL side for the rest of these teams?
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, we were talking this morning. I do a Sunday morning prospects-driven show, as you said, on MLB Network Radio, and we're looking at the American League wild card, and you've got right now Rangers, Blue Jays, Orioles, Tigers, Twins, Guards, all within a game. I mean, that's not like in the hunt graphic. That's within a game, right? That's, we're talking about seven teams, I think I just named. And then I don't think the Mariners are cooked yet, by the way. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Orioles are kind of your Eleanor, so to speak, that you keep saying, trust me, and it hasn't happened. That's the Mariners for me because of their starting pitching. And here they've lost 7 of 10 right now and are three back. But you've got eight teams within three games that are all very much in contention for that last spot. The Rangers are interesting because they don't, you know, a lot of these clubs, like Seattle as an example, they can pitch, but they haven't hit, right? Mm-hmm. Or you look, there are teams that, like the Astros, who are currently in first but could easily fall out of the playoffs altogether. You know, they can hit, but the pitching hasn't necessarily been there. Like, the Rangers can do a little bit of both at a very pedestrian level, but they don't have, like, a fatal flaw. So they're interesting to me. Also, the acumen of having won a title just a couple years ago, some of the guys in that clubhouse. But it's funny, you know, the teams that sold. So you're thinking the Blue Jays, certainly the Orioles who you referenced, the Tigers within a half game. I think that's fun and interesting. But I'm going to stick with the Mariners. I've been wrong all year, so I might as well just keep being wrong and or I have been right throughout, like early, not late kind of thing. I bet on pitching. That's what mm-hmm. I always bet on when it comes to baseball. It's an elite starting pitching group. They basically need to have a stretch where they get hot for 10 or 12 days, and they could rip off a 9-3, 10-2 type record. And so I'm going to say that they seize that last wild card eventually, or maybe even win the West. And let's face it. I mean, Matt, if they get into the playoffs, I know they're not particularly good, yeah. but if they get into the playoffs, do you want to deal with that team in a short series where they could piggyback starters and they're five deep with legitimate flamethrowers? And we mentioned Anderson and Sloan ready to help them as multi-inning guys potentially. So I'm going to ride with Seattle as kind of the best of this bunch on this graphic, even though they're the next team out of what we're looking at here.
So let's shift gears here over to football. And obviously, unfortunately, the biggest story of the last week for the Commanders has been the off the field stuff and worrying about a number and at all this. Is this an actual distraction, or are we in the media making it something more than it is?
Well, I think in the media, covering it is relevant and important, right? I think it's a legitimate story because you wonder then about the judgment of the team around a franchise quarterback who's up for a contract at the end of this mm-hmm. year. So it's like a relevant thing to wonder about the decision-making, the things that are being taken seriously, you know, and who's in Jaden Daniels' ear, so to speak. That said, from a football standpoint, if we're talking about a 7.5 win total or a plus 230 to make the playoffs or any of the other, you know, numbers people are looking at from a betting standpoint, this is absolutely irrelevant. I mean, Jaden Daniels is not taking away from his prep to send cease and desist letters. Nothing about Washington has changed. I've been at every practice in training camp. The preseason game just came and went on Friday night. Daniels didn't play. This changes nothing about their outlook.
So if we look at this team and in our final 90 seconds here, this is kind of one of the most polarizing teams, I think, whenever we get to people talking about what they could actually be. Obviously, you talk about Jaden Daniels' rookie season. You're like, yeah, okay, sky could possibly be the limit for this team. If we get kind of the more injury-riddled, maybe the down season that we see, okay, this team could be a 5-win, 6-win team. Where do you fall on kind of the outlook here for the squad?
I've got over 7.5. Mm-hmm. I'm not always optimistic about them just because I'm out there. But I think their defense is better than people think. It's markedly improved. If Daniels is healthy, he plays at a decent level with a quality defensive upgrade. They have a new scheme. They're running a Flores scheme from Minnesota, brought in his right-hand man, Durante Jones, spent $100 million on Adafe Owe on one edge, $12 million on Ka'Lavon Chase on another edge. They'll get Dorrance Armstrong back, who until week 8 when he got hurt last year was one of the more efficient pass rushers in the league. Their front seven includes drafting Sonny Styles, top 10, signing Leo Chanel from the Chiefs for $7, $8 million. They brought in an $8 million defensive tackle to help stop the run, an early down so they can have some fun on third down, and Tim Settle from Houston. So they really spent a lot of money. Pre-Diggs, 10 of their 13 free agent additions that'll play the most were on the defensive side of the ball. I think a lot of people talk about Daniels, the offense, the skill group. The story for Washington is they're historically terrible on defense. They had, I think, 3 times in 17 games last year, they didn't give up points on the opening drive, which was worst in the 2000s in team history. If they're better on defense, they'll compete, and I think that's going to happen. So I'd go over 7.5 wins for them.
He is Grant Paulson, the Grant and Danny Show, 106.7 there in D.C., and, of course, weekends over on Major League Baseball Radio. Appreciate the time, man, and good luck this season.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good catching up.
To Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Great conversation with Grant Paulson. Could sit and talk minor league baseball with him for a very long time. I know that would make for great radio for y'all out there as you drive around. But the minors is certainly something that's intriguing to me, because I do wonder if these guys out there can come in and make these teams better. Specifically, he mentioned the Mariners. The Mariners have Cade Anderson just waiting on the call. He has just absolutely dominated Double A. This is the way that the Mariners do things. They leave their studs in Double A and don't send them to Triple A, and they just call them straight up from Double A because their affiliate in Triple A plays in the PCL, which is like just a hitter's dream. Like, every ballpark is just so incredibly hitter friendly. So they just see what these guys can do in Double A, and as long as they can do it there in Double A, they'll call them straight up. And that's where Cade Anderson kind of sits in the grand scheme of things with all of that. Guys, football season, obviously right around the corner here, week zero. We know how this all goes. College football, we love it here. We got that guide that is available over on VSiN.com, and you can get it if you become a VSiN Pro subscriber. You do that over at VSiN.com/subscribe, and you can get it going for as little as $9.99. That'll also get you the articles breaking down everything every single day across the entire sports betting landscape. You got all the AI tools that we got over there as well, and then the picks page, so you can go in. If you didn't listen to every single show, I know, you got a life. You can go to the picks page. You can see what everybody's on for that day. So again, VSiN.com/subscribe, little as $9.99. to become a VSiN Pro. So in golf, we are watching Scottie Scheffler enter a Sunday with a 2-stroke lead. There are some storylines to go on here in this. We do have Sungjae Im, who is T2 right now, who entered the week on the outside looking in. This was the best 70 players. It ended up being 69 because one of the guys, Daniel Berger, was injured, didn't play. But you have to be inside the top 50 now in the points in order to advance and play next week. Sungjae Im entered 53rd. He's currently T2. That would put him in and in pretty comfortably. So we will have to see if he can keep it up, as long as he doesn't kind of fall off the face of the planet. We're also on Jordan Spieth watch. Jordan Spieth is currently 1-under. He is sitting T13. That only gives him about a 35% chance of getting into the top 50. So he's going to have to turn it on over the last, he's got 14 holes left, so he needs to kind of climb the leaderboard there on that one. Some of the other guys on the bubble, Keith Mitchell is currently sitting in even par on the day. He has about a coin flip shot if he stays where he's at right now. Of course, the higher he climbs, the better chance he has of moving on with all of that. But one of the bigger stories here is Scottie Scheffler is going to be teamed up today, paired up with, I should say, with his very good friend, Sam Burns. Sam Burns goes out yesterday, shoots 8-under, a 62, and climbs all the way up to T2. So they will be in the final group together. Now Scheffler will have a 2-stroke lead on his very good buddy. And he had some comments on playing with his best friend as they go into a round four.
It's always a little weird just because I want him to have success so much, and, you know, I think he wants the same for me. And so tomorrow we'll go out there and play our game and, you know, kind of see where things finish up at the end of the day. You know, it'll be competition like normal, but it'll be fun being out there with your friend, but it's also a little bit weird at the same time.
You guys going to share a chat tonight or no talking tonight?
I wouldn't say texting is really one of my strong suits, so probably not.
That doesn't shock me at all about Scottie Scheffler. He's like, yeah, I'm not really a texter. He's the guy that you get so frustrated with, for sure. You text him, and then you know that he read it. Like, there's just no way he didn't read it, but you just get nothing back from him. Like, that is absolutely Scottie Scheffler. Or no matter what you say, no matter what you do, you just get a thumbs up back, which is even worse. Just the thumbs up return. I was like, just don't even respond to me as opposed to just give me the little thumbs up. All that means is that you don't care to type at least a few words back to me, but you just want to acknowledge that you saw that I took the time to send words to you. Don't thumbs up. Just leave me unopened. I'd rather have that when it all comes down to it. But Sam Burns goes out. He's comfortably in. He doesn't have anything to play for here other than the championship. And we're on Sam Burns. If you listened to Long Shots this past week, so sorry, Sam. Here's your runner-up, basically. That's kind of how we've been doing things over on Long Shots. We do have Tommy Fleetwood, who in theory is within striking distance at T4 with Jake Knapp, both of them at 8-under. But starting 5 strokes behind Scottie Scheffler on a Sunday is probably not where you want to be, and certainly not something, because, I mean, you got to think, even if you do what Burns did yesterday and go 8-under, which, by the way, shooting a 62, shooting an 8-under is really, 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 really hard. You would still need Scotty to only, if Scotty goes 3-under, you know, then that's not going to win the tournament for you. So you have to go absolutely nuclear and then also hope that Scottie Scheffler just plays human, and you still have to climb over Burns and Sungjae Im. So I'm not saying that Fleetwood and Knapp are completely out of it. I'm saying it's very, very, very unlikely that they're to get it done. We're going to have either most likely an M, Burns, or Scheffler win here today. I'm going to be firmly in the corner of Sam Burns and hope that he can take down his good buddy. But Scottie Scheffler's the best in the world, so probably not going to happen. As we look one real quickly here, looking back from last night, producer Rick, the first thing he says to me is that the main events last night over in the UFC and UFC 330 were uneventful. They definitely were. They both go the distance. There wasn't a ton that happened in the fights. And, you know, look, you get two grapplers going at it, and that's what you got in the co-main, Dern Robertson. Like, I mean, you're not going to get a slugfest. I mean, Dern looked a little bit better on her feet than she has in the past, and she's been working pretty hard at her striking. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you're going to go back to what you're best at. You go down, and that's just kind of where that fight was always going to be, and it was just a snooze fest. I mean, she completely dominated rounds 1-4, and then in the fifth round just kind of like cruised because she knew as long as she didn't get finished that she was going to win. So she retains the belt in a very uneventful fashion there in that one. And then Islam Makhachev just does what he does. I mean, in a fight that felt maybe a tiny bit closer than a lot of his other ones, he still wins 4-1 on two of the scorecards, 3-2 on one of the other ones. I thought it was 4-1 in favor of Islam. And Ian Machado, Gary, I don't really know what the strategy was there. I thought that he would try to use his height and length and throw a ton of strikes because, I mean, again, you're not going to do anything on the ground against Islam Makhachev. It's not going to happen, right? I mean, your best chance is to try to knock him out, try to at least stun him or something like that and then finish him. We didn't see a ton of that from certainly through the first two rounds. It cranked up a little bit there in the third round, which he did clearly win round three, but it's an interesting game plan. I mean, look, he's still only 28. He told you that about five times in the post-fight presser. And so, you know, he's got plenty of time to kind of to hone in a little bit, but an interesting deal there. And all that did was give Islam Makhachev the record in the UFC. That is 17 straight victories inside the octagon for Islam Makhachev. So no longer will we be talking about Anderson Silva there in this conversation. It will be Islam Makhachev as the longest win streak inside the octagon. And when you look, I just don't know. You're going to have to take somebody that's so much bigger than him at the weight class that all of these takedowns and he can't just hold you down and that he can't whatever. It's not saying he's unbeatable. Certainly not. We've seen crazy stuff happen in the octagon for sure. But boy, it is when you watch him fight, you just wonder, with the way that he fights, who in the world is going to actually be able to win three of the five rounds? Because that's the thing. Like, you might win a round. Gary won a round. But you got to win three of them. And I just don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon. Over Major League Baseball, Diamondbacks and the Braves are going at it today. This is Michael Soroka going up against Bryce Elder. I like the Diamondbacks over their team total here in this one. Bryce Elder has been absolutely horrific here over the last month and a half for this Braves team. And what is the more kind of alarming thing for him? Strikeout rate has fallen off of a cliff. Walk rate has increased. And even through all of this, where the starts have not been good for him, he's actually been running on the right side of variance. His BABIP against, which is batting average balls in play against him, over his last five starts is actually 225. Over the last three starts is actually 214. League average is about 300. So even with running pure, he has had bad starts in all of this. The hard contact is up really, really high. 45.3% over the last five starts. 44% over the last three starts for him. So just I'm going to fade Elder here in this one, and I'm going to go with the Diamondbacks over their team total. And that being said, I'm not going to go the full game here over on the Diamondbacks because as good as Soroka has been, the bullpen has been shaky, at least over the last 3 weeks here for this Diamondback squad. And so even if Soroka gives you kind of a really good start here, something that I'm not willing to back all the way through all of this one. So I'm just going to play for them to get hits. I mean, get hits and get some runs across the board. So Diamondbacks team total there in that one. When we come back, we have this interesting exact finish. We talked about a couple divisions yesterday, and I got some comments on them, so figured we'd talk about a couple more today. So not necessarily if you think a team is going to win the division, but do you think a team's going to be second? Do you think a team's going to be last? Or a team might even slot in third where you have them. There are numbers attached to all of those, and we'll talk about them when we come back.